Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. My name is Christopher Harris and I'm joined by Kartik Krishnayar. It's been a while since we've done the last episode, but we are back. Part of that, I think, is in many ways is this. I mean, the group stage is a marathon. I've watched every game. I've been getting up at 4:30 every morning. So it was a relief when we entered into the final stages of the group stage matches because, I mean, the first kickoff games are at 10 a.m. Eastern. And man, this is a tough one just because those games, four games back to back to back. And then, I mean, there's other stuff going on in our lives too. But so, Kartik, you hanging in there through these games thus far?
Yeah, other soccer going on also. I mean, I think about Ronaldo and the Glazers selling Man United and my phone ringing off the hook those couple days after that and its impact on everything, even my family life. So a very, very strange time in this World Cup, kind of heady time also in the sport.
Well, the other thing too, in with this too, also is MLS season pass. Apple announcing the details about the pricing, and it is we won't have time to get into it on this episode. We will discuss it on a future episode. But also, even FA Cup happened. We had the second round of the FA Cup. We had the draw for the FA Cup third round. However, most of our attention, of you, the listeners, I'm sure, as were we, focusing on the World Cup, and we'll talk a little bit in a little while about the United States and their chances. We're recording this on Wednesday, of course. They play on Saturday against the Netherlands. But before we get to the US and talking about the games themselves, Kartik, I know this has been a very different World Cup in many ways, and your viewing experience or your listening experience might be quite different than mine. There's so many different choices available to us. But what have you done thus far? I mean, obviously you wrote that story, which was a great story, talking about the kind of pros and cons of Fox's and Telemundo's coverage. But now that we're in over a week after the World Cup has started, what's been your way of experiencing this World Cup?
Yeah, Chris, as time has gone on, and I wrote that article very early. I wrote it as the first set of group games was being finished. And now we're in the final set of group games as we record this. I think, from my perspective, Fox has gotten progressively more unwatchable as the tournament has worn on. Now, again, I had tried to take the perspective that, okay, let me put myself in the shoes of a normal soccer fan, or sorry, a normal sports fan who doesn't watch Bayern Munich or Manchester United or Manchester City. They don't know what goes on at these clubs. And Fox, I think, has done an outstanding job of introducing the World Cup to them and catering to them in the first few days. And while Telemundo may be taking the opposite approach or catering more to core football fans, and they've given some great background, actually, on the countries, right? You know, features on Senegal and Wales, etc. I've just drifted back towards ESPN FC, unfortunately. And I know this is something that a lot of our listeners, you know, who fill up the listener mailbag, they don't like me talking about constantly. But I'm getting the analysis I feel I need to fit my personal preferences as a soccer viewer, as a football viewer, from the ESPN FC program. And you're not getting any analysis out of Fox's studio. You're not getting any discussions about the players. It's like the players are completely new to a lot of the Fox studio team. They're in this sort of vacuum where they're not watching these players regularly, and so they don't know anything about them. So unfortunately for me, or maybe fortunately, I mean, I know this is controversial again, full-time whistle hits. You know, my television is off, or I'm off to other stuff outside of football. And then I'm waiting anxiously on Hulu or on ESPN Plus in the evening for when ESPN FC drops. And Dan Thomas and the gang start digging into these matches, because that's where I'm getting my analysis from. That's where I'm getting kind of the stuff I may not notice or I may not see, or the points I may want to hear are coming from that program. Again, like in 2018, same thing happened in 2018. But Chris, I do have to once again say that these are my personal preferences, and I understand why Fox has done what they've done. It's just, even though I defended it a week ago in that article, it's just not for me, and they've lost me as a viewer as the tournament has gone on.
I made the sacrifice by watching the first week of coverage every single minute on Fox Sports. So from 4 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern time every single day for a week. It was or 6 days, I think it was. Maybe it was seven. I lost count. Just to experience what it was like, just to get a good indication of where they're at, to give them, again, going in with an open mind, being encouraged by the list of commentators, and hoping for the best. But like I've said in previous podcasts, ready to have a few laughs and not take it so seriously. So after that 1 week, I went ahead and wrote a story, a pretty long, detailed story at worldsoccertalk.com that goes into infinite detail about what I saw, kind of good points, bad points. And then since then, now that that 1 week is done, after that, then I started looking at other ways to watch the games. And I've been watching... It's been a mixture. Still some Fox now and again, but a lot of the games I'm watching is on Telemundo through Peacock. And Peacock has every single game. To me, at the heart of soccer, commentating doesn't really matter. You mean, if you're watching the game and you're hearing Andres Cantor or Manuel Sol commentating and co-commentating a game, it could be them, or it could be somebody else, or it could be John Strong and Stu Holden. But really, at the end of the day, if you have the sound turned up and you're just watching the game, sometimes you're not listening to what they say. Sometimes you're just enjoying the moment and seeing the skill and hearing the crowd noise. So for me personally, not speaking or being able to read much Spanish, I've been watching Telemundo. Now, to complement that, like you, Kartik, in terms of Fox's coverage, I think Fox's coverage, the weakest part of it is the pre-match and the post-match. And then post-match, depending on what time of the day it is, if it's a 4 p.m. or a 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern game, sometimes once the game's over, it's done. The Fox is done, FS1's done, and then they're off to whatever programming they have. So, but for the most part, watching a lot of the pregame coverage, it is so light in analysis, and anything redeeming to make it worth your listening or watching. It's a lot of commercials. It's a lot of talk about nothing, really, and here and there. Even the team lineups come out usually about an hour before the game starts, sometimes an hour and 10 minutes before the game starts. So Fox has an opportunity to share the team sheets, talk about the decisions that the coaches have made. However, it's usually about 20 minutes into the pregame show. So about 20 minutes later, then actually those team sheets are available is when they talk about it. And then halftime, again, a lot of commercials, very light in analysis. So what I've done is watching a lot on Telemundo via Peacock. And then for the pre-match and the post-match, I've been listening a lot to BBC Radio 5 Live. And it's not geo-blocked for the pre-match or the post-match. And it's changed my enjoyment of this competition by about 50 times. Like, I get so much out of the discussion that they have and the analysis and thoughts, except when it's about England. If England's playing on that day... then it's so England-centric that I don't get that level of detail or analysis or thought that goes into the broadcast. But when it's a day that England's not playing, I mean, this, to me, watching the game on Peacock and then syncing the audio if you want to, through a VPN, syncing it with BBC Radio 5 Live is the best experience. But even for pre-match and post-match, it is... I mean, 50 times better than what we're hearing on Fox. And you get some really good insights. You even get Stu Holden doing post-match interviews on BBC Radio 5, where he's sharing his thoughts after commentating a game, which is kind of ironic at the end of the day. But that's been my experience. And now and again, I'll go back to Fox. So sometimes it's a family member who's watching the game. Maybe my wife or my kids have Fox on. And I'll hear what they're saying. And now and again, there is some good tidbits or some good thoughts in there. To me, the star of the show for Fox Sports, and you hardly ever see him, is Chad Ochocinco. He's on late at night at the Midnight Show. The other star of the show is Jeff Shreves, who I think has done a great job in terms of providing the latest updates. Beyond that, it's arguably one of the worst World Cup broadcasts ever, at least from the pre-match and the post-match. The games themselves, the commentators, what are your thoughts on the commentators, Kartik, from Fox Sports?
Well, I guess in terms of the commentators, I would say that Landon Donovan has been very good as a co-commentator. I think he adds a lot of insight. He seems to be also a guy that... This is ironic because there's this narrative among some U.S. fans that because Donovan was basically an MLS lifer and didn't do so well when he went to Europe on the few stints he had over there, that he must be very insular in his opinions. In fact, he seems to be much more well-versed in what's going on in the European club game and even kind of the psychology around playing, not playing at your club or having whatever difficulties at your club and then coming into a national team camp. So I've liked his co-commentary in his pairing with Ian Dark, who is quite good, obviously.
Yeah, no, I agree. Landon's been great. I mean, there's been some times where, I think he was a little bit rough maybe in the first match, but the conversations between him and Ian Dark are always fun. Landon Donovan shares some really good insight in terms of, again, from a player's perspective, but looking at things from a kind of a hardcore soccer fan's perspective. So there's enough there. And of course, Ian Dark's a legend. So the two of them together, I think that so far is the best partnership that I've seen or I've heard from Fox Sports on the commentating side.
Yeah, but otherwise, I don't have a whole lot of positive to say. In the specific case of Stu Holden, I'm not surprised by what you're saying because Stu Holden has been, I think, quite good when he's outside the Fox. The contained Fox situation, right? Or even when he's outside kind of the Fox script and doing Bundesliga, when they had the Bundesliga rights. I thought he was pretty good on Turner. I think he's been good. I've heard him on BBC 5 Live also. I think he's quite good. He knows the sport. There's some containment within the Fox ecosystem which makes him change. Maybe some script he has to go off of or some formula. John Strong has been okay. Hasn't been great. I don't think he's adding a whole lot to the broadcast one way or another. Derek Ray, Ali Wagner have been decent. I love Derek Ray. I think Ali Wagner sometimes chimes in with some strange thoughts, but she's also, I think, pretty good at analytical stuff. Jackie Oatley, Warren Barton have been decent. I think there is a limited knowledge of the teams playing from Warren Barton, but his analysis is actually pretty good based on the match taking place, but kind of the ancillary stuff. Even we just watched Australia and the Danes and Denmark and Barton's lack of knowledge of the players outside of the match itself. Like those Danish players are all kind of household names, but his lack of knowledge of the players outside of Ericsson and then his lack of knowledge of the entire Australia team was, I thought, kind of appalling. But his actual analysis of the match is quite good. Della Camera and Kobe Jones. I think Kobe's been pretty good. Della Camera, who's historically one of my favorites, I think he's kind of, Chris, out of touch. Mm-hmm. with what's going on, it's almost as if he's never watched some of these players before, and he's calling a match. He's a very good commentator in terms of calling a match, but his knowledge of many of these players, I think, has dropped off through the years. So that's something very obvious I've seen with him. And I think did I miss any teams? Or
I think that's everybody. Yeah. Yeah, the difference in terms of listening to BBC Radio 5 Live for their match commentaries and then syncing up that audio with the video that you see either from Fox Sports or from Peacock or Telemundo, to me is a game changer. Because, I mean, just a couple of examples here. Karen Bardsley, the goalkeeper for Manchester City, she's been really, really good. She's been a co-commentator for a bunch of the matches. Her level of analysis, she's American.
She's a California native.
She's really good.
Exactly.
The other person, like my favorite from this World Cup so far, has been Conor McNamara, and particularly from the games that are pretty boring, the games that are boring where nothing's happening. He's Irish, so he's sharing stories, and actually it's funny, it's enjoyable. So even if the game is boring. Which there's been some boring games, not all of them, of course. But even if the game is boring, he's talking through and sharing some insight that is, tangential to the game itself. It's not like he's throwing out stats or talking about something completely unrelated. He's been a joy to listen to. Stephen Warnock, Alan Shearer, Dion Dublin. Dion Dublin's been really good as a co-commentator. So on and so forth. So BBC's coverage is not the greatest by any means, but paired with the visuals that we're seeing and just listening to that audio, honestly, it to me has changed my appreciation of this World Cup. Because I'm getting more insights, I'm getting more thoughts, or they're seeing more things that I'm seeing. And again, after listening to an entire week and watching an entire week of Fox Sports' broadcasts, honestly, I can't think of one piece of information that I can remember. Like, as far as, like, hey, like, Clint Dempsey said this, or Carly Lloyd said that, or Stu Holden said this. I can't think of anything that they said that I was like, oh, wow, that's good. That's good insight.
So let me point this out. Alexi Lalas isn't everybody's cup of tea. I know a lot of people don't like him, and they make him the face of Fox's coverage. He's actually the one positive in that studio for me. He's actually done research. He's actually made himself knowledgeable about the players, what they're doing at the club level. Maybe he's just watching more football, soccer from Europe than the rest of them. But the rest of the studio, even when they make good points, like they'll occasionally make good points, it seems like they're winging it, right? There's a lack of preparation. It's like, let's all have a good time. Let's just wing it type of thing, which is not what we got from major tournaments when it was on ESPN. Even when under the restrictions of COVID in the Euros last time, and you and I were kind of disappointed with the coverage. We said that because it wasn't the classic ESPN coverage we'd seen in previous European Championships or World Cups. There is a essential prep and analysis that goes on in this that Fox doesn't have. Real quickly, you posted this morning on Twitter. We're recording this on Wednesday, and I'm friendly with Taylor Twellman, so he had actually sent me the clip earlier. His clip with Scott Van Pelt on SportsCenter. You got more analysis out of that?
Not 3 minutes.
That you've gotten out of like all. Yeah, all the Fox studio shows combined in the last 10 days. So, and I'm telling you, if you watch ESPN FC, you get more in a daily ESPN FC show than you get in Fox the whole time. Now, maybe that's what some people want. Again, I've tried to make this effort to dial back my personal preferences and say, okay, I understand the Premier League gets 1 million viewers a week on NBC. This thing is getting 15 million viewers, at least on Black Friday. It got 15 million viewers on Fox. So there are all these new fans, all these people who don't generally watch. Fox has to appeal to them. I get that. But still, at some point, those of us as soccer fans, we have to be catered to too, right? We're the base, and we're not being by Fox, and in the case of Telemundo, I was really pleased with Telemundo's coverage until Mexico started playing, and then it became a very, in-your-face thing about Mexico. Although, I have to say this, I watched the U.S.-Iran game on Telemundo on Tuesday. And Andres Contor's call of that match was beautiful, even if you don't know Spanish. I can only imagine the comparison between that and how John Strong called the game. I mean, it was great because Contor knew the occasion. He knew the moment for the American audience, what it meant, and it was just majestic.
It's so strange because Fox's World Cup coverage is, it feels like, not meant for soccer fans. It feels like it really is meant for the general public. And I think for those people who are tuning in for a game here, a game there, obviously in the US game, and maybe they'll watch an England game or whatever it may be, those people will not see the things that we're seeing. And we as the hardcore, we as the diehard, we as the base, the foundation for soccer in the United States, most of us are watching every game, or as many games as we can possibly, either live or on demand, or listening to the audio while we're at work. And it's us that are the ones that feel shafted. It's us that are the ones that feel that we've been let down in terms of how mediocre, really, the coverage is. Now, Telemundo, Kartik, again, I do not speak Spanish. I do not understand much Spanish, except for a few words here or there, thanks to living in South Florida for a while. But when I do have them both channels on at the same time, which oftentimes I do, I'll kind of compare sometimes, the amount of segments that Telemundo is doing about the different teams, interviews, custom content that they've generated. And then you look at Fox's screen and it's the talking heads behind the studio, which the studio looks amazing, by the way, basically just chat, just really offering nothing. The contrasts in styles are so dramatic, so different. I wish in many ways that Ashley did understand Spanish a lot more, because I would certainly appreciate the coverage that Telemundo is doing a lot more than I do now. Let me think. Anything else, Kartik, that we can mention? I mean, for the most part, Fox's coverage does look good. But I'm sure a lot of our listeners right now are screaming at us, Kartik. They're saying, like, hey, let me just finish. They're screaming at us, Kartik, because they're saying, like, well, Fox's TV ratings, 20 million for England against US. We'll find out shortly how many viewers tuned in for the US-Iran game. But they're saying, hey, it's working for Fox. What's your reaction to that?
The number would have been the same if it was on ABC, maybe higher. Okay, so I don't give that to Fox. Okay, I do think that they pushed this very kind of mainstream narrative, and I noticed that there are some people who political people, social commentators that never watched soccer, that haven't watched previous World Cups, that have weighed in. Maybe that is Fox. Fox has made they've done an amazing job of marketing. I will concede that. Okay, they've you can't turn a News Corp owned channel on in the United States without seeing some sort of World Cup promo. And that includes streaming platforms, et cetera. And I do think, the thing I was going to weigh in and say is I do think the fact that they're offering Tubi and 4K for free to people because anyone can get Tubi is really kind of a neat add on from their coverage. But I do think at some point they have a problem sustaining their fan base for future tournaments if they don't do this right. And here's the problem now for Fox. Fox has gone all in on international football, right? They basically divorced themselves from the club game. We think they'll probably keep a piece of MLS, but they may not. And by the way, that's kind of obvious too, Chris, in the commentary, with the exception of De La Camera, who does like to mention when guys playing Major League Soccer. We're even hearing it less from John Strong than usual, the MLS promo. So it's like they've gone all in on international football now, right? That's their bread and butter, not Major League Soccer or U.S. soccer or the U.S. domestic game anymore. But they have a Euro in a year and a half. They then have a Women's World Cup next summer. They have a Gold Cup in a year in next summer. They will literally have a tournament every summer from here on in, right? For the next the expanded Club World Cup too, for the next 6 years, 5.5 years. So they are not doing anything to sustain that audience long term. They are trying to get short term rating spikes, get whatever advertising dollars they get from that. It's very much kind of a very different strategy than the long term build in terms of building a product, maintaining an infrastructure, keeping a base that we've seen from other broadcasters of this sport. I think when you look at the way CBS is covering this sport, they are building blocks around every product they have in this sport and picking commentators that cater to that specific audience. We've talked about this before. CBS's commentators for CONCACAF matches are different than their commentators and their approach for Serie A matches, and for Serie A is different than Champions League. Champions League is different than, I just watched Lyon and PSG, Liga 1 women's the other night on CBS Sports Network. That's presented completely differently. Fox doesn't seem to get this.
Yeah, I think, you hit the nail on the head there, Kartik, on several different points. And I think that the risk here is that Fox is risking losing its hardcore soccer audience. And even before this tournament started, there were a lot of people for years who have been upset with Fox's coverage of soccer in general. But I think this one, more than any, is getting people to say enough's enough, and let me go ahead and watch it on Peacock, and let me watch the game in Telemundo. Even if I don't understand Spanish, I will watch it there, just because Fox's coverage has been so disappointing. And that is worrying. I mean, you look at the numbers that Peacock is getting for some of these games. They had more than 2 million people watched Argentina against Mexico in Spanish language on Peacock. More than 2 million, which is the most watched, as of recording this, the most watched, most streamed ever soccer game in the United States. I mean, that beats everything. More than 2 million. Now, if you were Major League Soccer for an MLS Cup final and you got more than 2 million viewers, linear and streaming combined, you'd be really, really happy, especially just like this most recent MLS Cup final. And we've had other games too. Some of the earlier round games, I think the USA against England game, had well over 1 million viewers on Peacock. And that doesn't include Telemundo or Telemundo Deportes' streaming apps. So I think Fox does risk losing the core audience. And I'm sure they're hoping, okay, yeah, the US goes far, goes deep in this tournament, and they win over a whole new audience. Now, the TV ratings side of things, yes, from a marketing side, in-house promotions, I mean, it's almost over the top, though, Kartik. I mean, like, the number of times in each game, every single game, 19 games before the USA against England game, 19 games where they mentioned several times, even in the commentary, I mean, people like Derek Ray, Ian Dock, games that had nothing to do with England against the US, having to over and over again mention, hey, don't forget, this Friday, USA against England. So it did work.
Oh, yeah.
I know. So and I think Derek Ray, one of the broadcasts, actually said, like, hey, I promise this is the last time I'm going to mention this. But, yeah, USA against England coming up on Friday. And I think later in the second half, then he had to mention it again. So it's I understand it. I understand what they're doing. And to them, this is a success. However, like you said before too, Kartik, if ESPN had the rights to the same tournament, would they be getting the same ratings, or would it be higher, or would they be lower? I'd argue actually they'd be higher, because you wouldn't lose the hardcore audience and you would gain the mainstream audience. And we've seen from NBC's broadcasts of the Premier League and how they treat the viewer, intelligently. They don't talk down to the viewer. We've seen too with ESPN's broadcasts of the World Cup, where they, same thing as NBC, they talk intelligently, they're not condescending. And the reality is that Fox used to have the Premier League rights, and it was at times condescending. Yeah, the football versus football episode of the FA Cup, I think it was, or a Premier League match that they had. I mean, they definitely were condescending at times before. I think ESPN or CBS or NBC, if they did have the rights, yes, Fox does a great job of marketing, but I still think that an ESPN or CBS or NBC would be able to get greater ratings because less people would go over to the Spanish language side.
let's not forget that the ratings for the Euros last summer blew our minds, given it's not a competition with the United States in it. It was a competition shoehorned, moved because of COVID. And I will admit that ESPN got lucky, right? ABC and ESPN got lucky that Italy and England, which would probably be the two European squads with the biggest followings in the U.S., got to the final. But the numbers were pretty remarkable for the Euros. So I think there's an upward trajectory for the sport, particularly the international sport, in this country in general. And we're also seeing, even at the club level, right, the numbers CBS is getting when they throw a match over the air on a Wednesday afternoon on CBS network television is blows our mind. At the same time, there's very vibrant Spanish-language coverage going on. So, yeah, I think you're right, Chris. As you outlined that, I was thinking to myself, yeah, you know, ESPN probably would get better numbers. CBS probably would get better numbers. And again, FS1 is not ESPN, okay? It's just not as much in the mainstream consciousness. And this idea that they don't do post-match is a very bad thing. But I do once again want to give them props for the 2B thing, because I think that is a bonus add-on sort of feature that we've never had before, where you can go back on a free platform and watch all the matches in 4K, which is really
amazing. The idea of that is great. The feedback I'm getting from a lot of our readers and listeners is that it's not 4K. It doesn't look 4K. So I haven't been able to test that to verify that, but that's what I'm hearing is.
For me, it has been.
Okay.
I can tell the so in fact, I've done this where I can't remember which match it was, but there was a match. It was one of the days where you had a 5, 7, 8, 11, and during the 8, I watched the 2B5 and flipped back and forth between that and FS1, and the picture was much, much better. And then same thing, 8 and 11. I watched the 8 again on Tubi, and the picture had been better than it had been on FS1. Whether it's real 4K, I mean, there are varying degrees of 4K, right? If it's HDR, if it's, you know, whatever kind of picture. But I think it's been 4K for me. I mean, I compare it to – I own a pretty exhaustive library of 4K movies that I bought. You can blame me for that. That's kind of stupid to have bought all those movies. But the picture quality has been similar. So I will defend Fox on that.
So my bottom line is that if you're going to watch the games, I mean, watch them on Fox Sports or Telemundo or Peacock. The commentary on Fox is not so bad. I mean, some commentators are better than others, but it depends on your style. Everyone has different tastes. However, for the pre-match coverage and then the post-match coverage, you can listen to BBC Radio 5 Live through streaming and apps and tune in for free. It's not geo-blocked. And then the match commentaries themselves, those are geo-blocked because BBC does have the rights in the UK, but does not have the rights outside of the UK to broadcast radio commentaries of those games. But that's what's your bottom line, Kartik? Is it similar or a little bit different?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
My bottom line is that I'm watching the bare minimum on Fox. I'm watching a lot on Telemundo, and I'm supplementing my coverage with outside analysis. You know, another thing I should mention, actually, in passing before we move on, Chris, is that the Athletic has provided a lot of good and analytical videos on YouTube also after the matches. And it's a little difficult when the U.S. is playing or England's playing because, again, the usual biases towards or overemphasis on those two countries from various Athletic writers. But they the videos have been very good and analytical and tactical on other matches. So I've augmented my coverage with that, and I think I'm going to take your suggestion on BBC Five Live. I think that's a great suggestion to play that alongside the Peacock or Telemundo coverage if you're not comfortable listening in Spanish.
Yeah, except for England days when England are playing. And that's kind of a little piece of feedback or a little bit of insight too, is that on social media, I've been getting a lot of kind of negative feedback just because we're trying to cover all the teams. I mean, we're fans of world soccer. Yes, we want the United States to do well. Yes, we want them to do as well as they can, but we're not just focused on one team. We've been covering all 32 teams on the websites. We have articles, analysis, you name it. We've got so many articles. We've hired several writers that cover that are specialized in covering the different countries, and that's where we're coming at this from, is from a global cosmopolitan perspective, where we are soccer fans, and yes, we love seeing the US play well, but we're watching it as soccer fans. We're watching every game as much as we can and enjoying the beauty of soccer. Now, mentioning on the topic of the U.S. national team, Kartik, personally, myself, I did not come into this tournament with high hopes about the U.S. I knew that they had a lot of talent. I mean, you know, obviously watching all the games. However, I just kind of felt that they wouldn't have the experience necessary. And a few weeks ago, I think it was Kyle and I, we recorded a podcast called The Weird World Cup, where we were saying that there's so many different factors going into this World Cup, where this could be a World Cup turned upside down. Everything from players getting injured, the club season, I mean, ending a week before the tournament started, as well as it being played in November and December, in the middle of a season, and all these different factors. And I think we said during that podcast, this could be a really unpredictable World Cup. So given that, Kartik, and as well as your insight that I definitely certainly want to hear too, where are you with this U.S. national team right now?
Oh, I'm very high on them. I think the youth is really the obstacle, right, as you and Kyle mentioned in that podcast, which, by the way, was excellent, although now it's kind of dated if you want to go back and listen to it. I do think that they – they have shown a great degree of poise for a young team. We have seen standout performances from top players. I think Greg Berhalter has been criticized for being too dogmatic and having an ideology. Well, he's kind of broken that ideology on multiple occasions in this World Cup, even in his selection before the World Cup, dropping Zach Steffen, who has no business being anywhere near the national team right now. Believe me, I saw Zach Steffen at Manchester City. Anytime he played, he would make a mistake. And then the first three matches this season with Middlesbrough, right out of the gate in the championship, mistakes. Tim Ream being called back into the team, something I called for a long time. He's playing so well with Fulham. He and Anthony Robinson, a Jedi, have a natural connection. You can't create that on your back line normally with this short, no training camp, short window for this international tournament. So getting two guys playing next to each other who play next to each other week in and week out in the Premier League, big get for the U.S. Really, that is smart from Berhalter. Calling Cameron Carter-Vickers in, a guy that we have not seen in the national team for some time, but has been in very good form for Celtic. Another big call that he made, and he got right. And I would say the same thing in terms of Haji Wright. coming into this team instead of Pifolk or Pepe. I think he's made the right decision. And when he started Josh Sargent, who does a lot of things off the ball, a lot of U.S. fans don't appreciate. And then I think ultimately, I'm tired of hearing about Gio Reyna, okay? Stop it already. The U.S. Got through the group. The U.S. has punched above their weight, given their relative inexperience, given the fact they didn't even qualify for the last World Cup. I'm so tired of hearing about Giovanni Reyna. Yes, he is probably the U.S.'s best player when fit. Yes, he is the U.S.'s most technical player. He is the most creative player. He's all those things. He's the best U.S. player, I think. Although you could argue Tyler Adams, in also the way he's played this season at Leeds, maybe challenging Reyna for that spot. But guys, stop it already, okay? You're not in the camp. You're not a physio. You're not a coach. It's okay to have opinions, but there is a reason clearly why Berhalter has had Reyna on a very short leash, and it's worked to this point. Now, fall behind. Yeah.
Well, if I may just mention one thing about Gio Reyna before you go off on this one, but I do want to mention it because I want to have a chance to say this. But I think with Gio Reyna, if I'm Greg Berhalter, there's definitely that thought in the back of my mind. I would imagine that he is very injury prone. So you put him in, you start him in the game. What if after 10 minutes he re-injures that injury and has to come off the field? I mean that hurts US big time in terms of then having to make a substitution.
Ask Diego Simeone about that Champions League final. Atleti versus Real Madrid. He starts Diego Costa, who we knew was hurt and was injury prone. And what happened? And he didn't have that substitution at the end of the match when they were trying to see it out. And Sergio Ramos gets that late goal. And we know what happens, right? Atleti loses an extra time.
So who would you say is the player of the tournament so far for the United States?
Oh, Tyler Adams, no doubt.
Yeah, me too.
I think no question, first game, he dictated the tempo and the pace of that game in the first half against Wales. Second half, Wales were the better team, but he still played okay. England game, he was the best player. Took Bellingham and Rice completely out of the match, although I think actually in that second game, maybe I would say Musa was the better of the two. Musa was just elite, obviously motivated to play against England. He had spent his entire youth setup in the England setup and had made a switch to the U.S. because Berhalter had recruited him. Give Berhalter credit for that, right? Mm-hmm. We know Southgate was interested in Musa, but Berhalter was more aggressive. And then Adams in the third game was the best player. I do think, if I just to dial it back from in analyzing the U.S., I think the U.S. has been better than I thought. The U.S. has a chance to go very deep in this tournament. But I think, Chris, what you and Kyle talked about a couple of weeks ago on that podcast is absolutely the takeaway point about the U.S. and about so much of this World Cup. This is a completely different World Cup. We've just, in the last 20 minutes or so, seen Denmark get eliminated. Denmark were the hot pre-tournament dark horse, but to the point where they weren't even really a dark horse anymore. So many people were picking them to go to the semifinals or even win the World Cup. What we're finding is European sides and sides overly reliant on European-based club players who've come in banged up or have had some sort of uncertainty at their club are struggling. I guess we're only through two Portugal matches, but they would be the exception, and maybe it's just because they're so loaded. But everyone else, there seems to be some degree of struggle. France hasn't really struggled either, and I don't put much stock into the Tunisia match. But everybody else, there seems to be issues. So this, if there's ever going to be a World Cup for an outsider, which would include the United States, which would include Australia, which would include Senegal, this might be it.
Yeah, the one thing about the U.S. is obviously the goal-scoring department. And I mean, you look at from the group stage, Group B, Iran scored twice as many goals as the U.S. Iran scored 4 goals. The U.S. scored 2 goals. I mean, those 2 goals mattered big time to get them through to the next round. That's my only concern about this U.S. team is who's going to score those goals, especially if Pulisic isn't 100%, even if he does play against the Netherlands. We're still waiting to hear back about the scan on Josh Sargent. Haji Wright, I don't rate at all. So who scores those goals? And PFOC might have been the guy that could have done it. I mean, Timothy Weah looks in spectacular form in terms of his speed. It's just a shame that that goal he scored in the first half against Iran was called for offside. But that's the only concern, is scoring goals. And that's the most important part of it.
Yeah, although the Netherlands have a similar concern, right? I like what Van Gaal has done in terms of the way they've set up. But they're another team that hasn't been as good as I thought they'd be. And I think maybe I was overrating them because of who their manager is. Because international football, you have most of the managers are not very good, or they're club rejects, right? And then you have a guy like Van Gaal who's an elite manager by any standard.
Yeah, but you have Cody Gakpo, who's on fire now.
Yeah, he's very good. Yeah, at PSV, and so good that I think I tweeted this. I signed him that night. Got into a bidding war with Atalanta and a couple other sides, and signed him on Football Manager because I knew when the update came out he would be more expensive. So that's part of playing Football Manager in real time on online, but on your computer, but connected to the online server. Yeah, Gakpo can score. He's not necessarily an out-and-out striker. Memphis is still a guy that is a danger man, and obviously they've got Frankie de Jong in midfield. That's where I think Tyler Adams, again, you mentioned he's been the player of the tournament so far for the U.S. I agree, where, again, he's going to have a huge responsibility because I think another thing is that Weston McKennie is clearly not fully fit. And he can only give you about 60 minutes. This could be a 120-minute match. The last couple times the U.S. have been knocked out of the knockout stages, the matches have gone 120 minutes. So you need someone who's going to negate Frankie de Jong in midfield. And then my other concern real quickly about the U.S. with this match is how good the Dutch can be on set pieces when you've got de Jong taking free kicks and corners, and you've got Van Dijk and Ake and De Ligt and really some elite center backs in terms of elite play in the air that you have to contend with.
Yeah, I like the USA's chances against Netherlands. I think it's a good matchup. It's a good team to play. However, if the US does, and again, US is underdog in this game, but if the US does beat the Netherlands, the next game after that is most likely against France. From then on, it gets tougher and tougher. And that's the thing, though, too, finishing second in the group, which is a great achievement for the U.S., qualifying for the round of 16. Finishing second means that you do go to the harder side of the bracket. If they had finished in first, they would have been playing Senegal. And then from then on, the games, the opponents, nothing's easy, but a little bit easier than the reigning World Cup champions in a quarterfinal stage. That's if France progresses to that stage, of course, and the US. But I'm excited. I'm actually very surprised how good this US team is, especially after that Wales game. And I think that England game was the game changer, because in that Wales game, great first half. Second half, they, I think, mismanaged it, really. But that England game, I was like, wow, this team is on fire. And that's a good test, right? I mean, England, even though they played poorly in that game by their standards, that is a high caliber top five in the world team. And if you can do that well against France, against England, conceivably you could do the same against France, perhaps, or whoever the opponent would be, if you can get past the Netherlands. And from then, who knows? It's a cup competition. You mean three more games and you're in the final, and who knows? It's been such a weird World Cup that anything could happen, and it very well may happen, which is crazy. It's wonderfully crazy.
Yeah, it is wonderfully crazy. The one thing I would disagree with you on is I do not think England are a top five side. I'm not sure they're a top 10 side.
Well, the FIFA rankings.
Well, in rankings, right. Yeah, Belgium's ranked second in the world rankings. We know how much that means. I think England will be out whenever they play. It might be against Senegal. It's Senegal without Mane, but England, and I don't blame Southgate. I just don't think their midfield situation hasn't really progressed. I think that you've got a lot of guys that are kind of out of form at the club level. Harry Maguire always brings it for England. He's having a great tournament, by the way. But Otherwise, I mean, I'm a little concerned about them, honestly. They need to start really controlling matches in midfield, which they again, I know they beat Wales 3-0, but in the first half, maybe it was that Joel Allen had just come back from injury and he played okay for 45 minutes. They didn't look very good to me against Wales. I felt like the midfield, the idea of playing Bellingham as a 10 and then going with a double pivot, to me, didn't really work either with Henderson playing. Maybe they stole a game because they got Henderson those minutes, and now you'll have you'll be able to bring Mount back in, and they'll be fresher. But there are a lot of concerns I have about England. I even had a lot of concerns about them coming out of the Iran game. I know they scored a lot in that match, but there were some clear vulnerabilities that we saw. And if you compare the U.S. Against Iran to England against Iran, those counterattacks that were creating chances and in two cases goals against the against England, the U.S. were able to snuff out and prevent the final ball from coming in. So I'm not that positive about England right now.
All right, listeners, we're going to skip the listener mailbag this week. We will be back next week, probably after the actual round of 16 matches finish, and there's a little bit of a break before the quarterfinals. We'll be discussing, I'm sure, a lot of the television coverage, streaming coverage, and the games themselves too. But if you do have any feedback, questions, want to rant or rave about anything we've said on this podcast, there's a bunch of different places you can go ahead and post that. You can send us a voicemail. The number is 561-247-4625. Also, you can go ahead and post your comments at worldsoccertalk.com in the podcast thread in the comments section there. Or you can reach out to us via Twitter. And that is the Twitter address is at World Soccer Talk. And last but not least, two more, facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. Leave us a message there or send us an email to web@worldsoccertalk.com. And we'd love to read those out next week on air. Kartik, oh man, where can everyone find you on social media if they want to touch base with you?
Yeah, I'm at KKFLA737 on Twitter. I'm experimenting with some of these new social media platforms that have come out, Tribal, Mastodon, but I'm not versed in that yet. I think maybe after the World Cup, that 8 days we have between the end of the World Cup and Boxing Day, Premier League season, I'll play around with those more. I noticed that there's a hashtag Mastodon FC on Mastodon for all the to aggregate all the football content, soccer content. So that's kind of exciting, but don't look for me there yet. So Twitter at KKFLA737.
All right, and you can also reach me personally. My email address, my Twitter handle is TheGaffer, one word. All right, so thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. Thanks for your patience. It's been a while since we've done the last podcast, but we will be back next week. It's been great catching up with you, Kartik, and it's been great talking to you, the listeners, about this very World Cup that we're going through. Definitely the weirdest World Cup that's ever happened in history since 1930. It's just so different, and good things, bad things, some things in between, but we're trying to get through and also trying to cover it in a lot of detail, everything from the controversies to the news, to the analysis, to the match reports. You can find at worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, one more thing before we go. That is something that you've noticed. I have too, but I want to share notes, but you go first in regards to Fox's coverage.
Yeah, so Fox is omitting any sort of controversial elements out of matches. So I'm going to just give one example, which was I had to go, I have an electric car, so I had to get juice in my battery. So I had to go to a car charging port during the Uruguay-Portugal match. And I then am forced to listen to Fox's coverage on Sirius. And John Strong basically said, oh, you know, we have a match interruption. And I have no idea what it is. 30 seconds later, Chris, you're tweeting on the World Soccer Talk handle. This is what it was. You know, it was someone with a pride shirt streaking onto the pitch. That there have been several examples of this, but that's the first one that comes to mind where there are things that Fox is missing that they're deliberately cutting out of their coverage that you know, we're giving you on World Soccer Talk and other platforms are giving it as well that you're missing from the tournament if you just depend on Fox's coverage.
Yeah, it's so blatant that it is funny. I mean, it's sad because these are important things that are happening, but it's ridiculous what they're doing. I mean, it really comes down to the censoring themselves. Fox is from actually talking about the things that everyone else is talking about, that everyone else is seeing. And before this tournament started, David Neal, who is the lead executive producer for Fox's coverage of the World Cup, was asked the question about, will you be covering the human rights abuses and things like that? And he said, if it happens on the field, and this is not a direct quote, paraphrasing here, if it happens on the field, we will cover it, and we will cover it fully. But if it's happening off the field, there's other, basically other news organizations out there that focus on that. And people are not coming to the games to watch the controversy. They're coming to watch the actual matches themselves. So, however, I do believe that people are coming to Fox and Telemundo and Peacock to watch the games, definitely. The things that are happening during the World Cup, some of this is happening on the pitch. And that example that you gave, Kartik, about the pitch invader, who, if you didn't notice it, that was the, I think, Portugal-Uruguay game, I think. But ran onto the field, had a T-shirt that was on the front that said, Save Ukraine. On the back of it, it said, supporting the Iran protest or something to that regard. And then had a pride banner. And the fact that neither John Strong nor Stu Holden mentioned anything about what that person had on his shirt or the big banner, which you couldn't miss, the actual flag that that person was waving. And John Strong says something along the lines of, yes, we have a pitch invader on the field, and that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and that's all I got because I was, as I said, I was at a pumping or an electric fueling station, and I was listening to the match on Sirius while the thing is in my car, and I'm like,
right.
Oh, you know, what is that? And then it was, if you hadn't tweeted it, I wouldn't have known.
Well, the funny thing is about that, Kartik, is that I counted the number of seconds that there was silence after that. He didn't know what to say. There was 50 seconds of silence from the moment that he said, like, hey, there's a pitch invader on the field, until then he started commentating again. And for John Strong to go 50 seconds without commentating is a rarity indeed. And it just shows, I mean that's so, I mean, I don't know. To me, That looks poorly on John Strong. I mean, yes, he works for Fox. Yes, he's basically probably been told he has a gag order. He can't mention anything. Or maybe the producer was in his ear saying, like, hey, don't say anything. Don't mention it. Let's just wait for the next play to start and then start commentating again. Whatever was said, it's a bad look for Fox when there's something on TV, we're seeing it and you're being silent. You're not even saying anything. And like Fox said, they said, okay, anything that happens on the field, we will cover and we'll cover fully. Well, you mean that's the opposite of actually what they're doing. Two more things, Kartik, before we go too on this. Some of my notes I wrote down during the tournament, and I'm sure there's other things that we've missed too, because there's so much stuff happening, which is funny because it's so bad. But the whole armband issue, the One Love armband, yeah. Going into that Germany Japan game beforehand, where on social media everyone was like, hey, is Manuel Neuer going to wear the actual armband? And then nobody really knew whether or not he was going to, and he's walking out onto the field. And then FIFA, basically doing no close-ups of Manuel Neuer, only showing kind of faraway shots, even though he touched the ball probably more than a dozen times in that first half. And then finally, I think about 30 minutes in, then they did show a close-up. And then from then on, I guess the FIFA producers probably thought, okay, no, it's not a One Love armband. It's okay. We can continue showing close-ups of him now. But Fox, I don't think, as far as I can tell from all the coverage I watched, I don't think they mentioned the word armband once. They've not even mentioned it in their reports or anything about the One Love armband. Completely ignored that, which is really I mean, how much lower can you get in terms of the coverage?
Why, if you watch ESPN FC, Chris, you think you're watching a completely – they must be watching a different tournament than you're seeing on Fox, because obviously we know ESPN's MO sometimes is to talk about – to fuel that stuff, right? That's been one criticism of them from people who say, oh, keep the politics out of sports. But ESPN talks about that constantly, right? The armband, the you know, the streaker, all of this stuff they talked about regularly, in addition to their own special report, right, their E60 that they had on it. So you would think, Chris, if you're watching ESPN FC every night, you might be watching a completely different tournament than what they're covering on Fox.
It's like it's on a different planet. You know, it's like planet Pluto. There's a World Cup happening, which is a different which is Fox's World Cup compared to the World Cup that's on planet Earth. One more thing, Kartik, on this one too. I mean, again, listeners, if you do have other things that you've noticed, let us know. We'd love to talk about that. Is the whole issue, which was a very serious issue, about the U.S. soccer men's national team social media account removing the Islamic Republic symbol from the flag. And as far as I can tell, Fox did not mention one word about this. Now, they did mention, they showed a clip of Tyler Adams being interviewed in that press conference, being asked about the situation in Iran and how that compares to the United States and some of the discrimination in the United States and his thoughts about that. They did cover that, which is more really, I think, probably more racial than anything. But Iran, the whole episode of U.S. men's national team, and for those listeners who don't know, U.S. men's national team posted, I think, after that USA-England game, the group standings, and didn't include the actual symbol, which is the official flag of Iran. And I believe they did another tweet on Saturday, again, didn't have it. And then on Sunday, a lot of the U.S. soccer journalists, World Soccer Talk included, pointed that out and was saying, like, hey, what's going on here? And then U.S. men's national team responded, well, actually, U.S. soccer spokespeople responded to say that this was just a 24-hour thing. We wanted to make a statement against, for the protests in Iran regarding a lot of the freedoms that women, lack of freedoms, really, for women in Iran. As far as I can tell, Fox did not even mention, they didn't even cover it. This is a huge talking point on Sunday across social media, and I don't think they even covered it, Kartik. And Iran is a country that has very close ties to Qatar. I have nothing against Iranian people at all in terms of, I mean, they're good people, but the government has a very rocky relationship with the United States. This just seemed really strange that Fox would not even mention any of this, especially when it involves the U.S. national team.
Yeah, very close relations with Russia, too. Let's not forget they're actually helping to arm Russia in their current actions in Ukraine. So it's very strange that Fox would mention it. And of course, Russia was the last host of the World Cup, and Fox broadcast that World Cup also presented that as kind of an infomercial for Russia, which was, I think, very damaging in hindsight. So that's kind of the way they cover these tournaments.
Yeah, and again, we go back to the issue of, is Fox losing their audience by being so blatantly censoring themselves and so hypocritical in many ways, and just like any other broadcaster in the world. So if you look at Telemundo would have covered these details, as would have the BBC, ITV, etc. worldwide. And some of the feedback I've been getting for some of our listeners and readers, mostly readers, or mostly on social media, has been like, well, rules are rules. And if Fox went ahead and started talking about these things, FIFA would take the rights away from them. Well, that's not true. Because in that case, most
think FIFA wants that court battle
most of the broadcasters would lose the rights to the next World Cup, because most of the broadcasters around the world have been, and it's not like they're on a mission to make Qatar look bad. They're just addressing it and saying, hey, these are the issues, these are the things that are going on in this country, and maybe the World Cup can be a force to help enact change, perhaps. But by Fox completely ignoring it, it's how much worse can you get?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.